continue now with the sixth installment of how Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, became a chosid and a talmid of the holy Baal Shem Tov. You will recall that Rav Baruch's parents passed away when Rav Baruch was yet very young, and at the age of 14, Rav Baruch began this path of taking care of himself, not coming on to the help of others, spending almost all his time in the various Bate Midrashim and various towns, sitting and learning, and when necessary, earning his own livelihood and earning enough so that he could continue sitting and learning untroubled. And his 4 years passing, with the fourth year being where he spent that time in Lozhnes, part of it by Rav Avrom de Gertner, he left him just before Pesach. And he spent that time with the smithy of the Bromzhel, Rav Elazar Ruvain, after which he went on to Vitebsk, which was supposed to be on the road, to Avrom Zeva Bashenkovich, whom he had heard from Rav Avrom de Gertner. But while in Vitebsk, he was so taken by the knowledge of his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, who was a Rosh Hashiva in the yeshiva there, together with Rav Paltiel, that he decided to stay there for a while. Meanwhile, this whole time, and so the summer had passed, Pesach in the summer passed without Avrom de Gertner knowing what had happened to Baruch. He worried, Avrom de Gertner worried about his disappearance and why he possibly left without a trace. When Baruch disappeared from Lozhne without leaving any trace behind him, Rav Avrom was very puzzled and troubled. Why had Baruch done this? Could it be that he did not wish to eat at his table? Avrom had his eye on Baruch, and knowing him to be the fine and excellent young man that he was, hoped to get him to be his son-in-law. His daughter Rivka was a very nice and gifted young lady, and Avrom could think of no better match for his beloved child than Baruch. He had already learned all there was to know about Baruch from his contact with him. He knew that he came from a distinguished family who originated from Poznan, and that he himself had been born in Vitebsk and brought up in a house on the outskirts of the town near the banks of the river Dvina. Rav Avrom had gathered all this information piecemeal, for Baruch talked very little, and he took quite a while to piece it together bit by bit until he got a complete picture of Baruch and his environment before he came to Lozhne. As for Baruch's character and his original way of living, this he understood and appreciated better than anyone else. Avrom had particularly wanted to have Baruch stay at his house for Pesach, so that he could become acquainted with his family, his daughter Rivka included, and then he hoped it would be easier for him to put the proposition to Baruch to marry Rivka. Could Baruch have guessed Avram's intention and run away because of it? Avram hoped that that was not the reason, and made up his mind to leave no stone unturned until he found Baruch again. It was just like looking for a needle in a haystack. Where was he to begin? That summer, Avram once again rented some orchard, this time with a new partner. One of these orchards was quite some distance from Lozhne. When the time came for picking the fruit, his partner suggested that Avrom would do well to take the fruit into Vitebsk, the only big town in the neighborhood, where he felt sure they could get a better price for their produce. He thought he would have to use some persuasion to get Avrom to agree to go to a further off town, and was somewhat surprised when Rav Avrom expressed himself quite ready to go. Knowing that Vitebsk was Baruch's birthplace and hometown, Avrom hoped he might be fortunate enough to get some clue as to Baruch's whereabouts. Avram was, thank God, very successful regarding the sale of the fruit, for he did, in fact, obtain very good prices. But losing no time after concluding his business, he set off in his search for Baruch. He started on the outskirts of the town, near the Dvina, where Baruch grew up, and then right through the town. But despite all his efforts, asking numberless people, none seemed to know where Baruch was to be found. Avram would return home disappointed. Still, Avram refused to despair. Although he visited Vitebsk several times during the summer without getting any closer to solving the mystery of Baruch's disappearance. Finally, Avram decided to go to his one-time teacher, Rabbi Avram Zevra Beshenkvich, and asked his advice as to whether he should continue with his search for Baruch or look for another suitor for his daughter. For Rabbi Avram Zev was more than a teacher to Rabbi Avram. He had brought him up and later helped him to marry and settle down. Rabbi Avram Zev advised Avram to wait just a while longer, and if he still did not find Baruch, then to give up the search and find someone else for his daughter. While he was in Bashenkovich, Avram became acquainted with a student from the Vitebsk Yeshiva, and during their conversation, that student spoke enthusiastically about the young Rosh Yeshiva there, whose name was Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok. The student did not know that Avram was frantically searching for Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok's brother-in-law, nor was he aware of their relationship any more than Avram was aware of that relationship. Avram rather liked what he had been told about Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, and made up his mind to look him up when next in Vitebsk and become acquainted. And that is exactly what he did when, during the winter, Rabbi Avram had occasion to visit Vitebsk. While still on the lookout for any information which might lead to Baruch's discovery, he thought it would be a good idea to take the opportunity of meeting Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok. He naturally did not know of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok's connection with Baruch, but in the course of their conversation, Baruch's name cropped up, and to Avram's delight, he learned that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok was Baruch's brother-in-law, and moreover, that Baruch lived in the same city of Vitebsk. Avram's joy was indescribable. He told Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok of his long search for Baruch, and of his earnest wish and hope that Baruch would become his son-in-law. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok thought it would be better for Avram himself to broach this delicate subject to Baruch, and cautioned him to be very careful in his approach so as not to frighten Baruch off. But where was Baruch? His own relatives rarely saw him. All that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok could tell Avram was the name of the Beis HaMedrash which Baruch frequented. Avram lost no time and hurried off to this Beis HaMedrash. He settled himself in a corner to study, and before long, sure enough, in came Baruch. He noticed the visitor, and to Avram's relief and pleasure, Baruch, who had always been so distant and reserved, extended a hearty Bruchim Aboim, a hearty welcome to Rabbi Avram, and greeted him in the friendliest manner. They both embraced affectionately. Rabbi Avram said, "I've searched for you such a long time, my dear Baruch. I was terribly upset when you disappeared from Lozhne without a word, leaving no trace behind you." Rabbi Avram needed no assurances, however, that Baruch was as friendly disposed towards him as he was towards Baruch. He could see it and feel it, and it made him feel good. He felt that he had not, after all, been wasting his time in what looked like a fruitless effort. Here was dear Baruch, and hopefully he would become his dear son-in-law. Avram did not want to rush matters. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok had advised him to proceed carefully. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok took the opportunity of sounding out Baruch on the subject of the proposed Shidduch and preparing the way for Avraham to discuss this important matter with him. Baruch proved less difficult than he feared, and in fact agreed without hesitation to Avraham's proposition, this to be conditional only upon his being allowed to live according to the way that he had marked out for himself. Baruch wanted to make it quite clear to Reb Avraham that he could only become his son-in-law if he, and of course his daughter Rivka, accepted the following conditions. Baruch asked for no dowry, no nadin as such, but he wanted Avraham to have a separate house built for him and Rivka, the reason being that he wanted this house to be a hachnosas urchem house, a guest house for poor wayfarers, particularly for those mystics who were at that time roaming the country in their sacred task of helping their poor, downtrodden, and despairing fellow Jews. Baruch had met many such mystics, mekubolim, in the course of his wanderings. As we know, Baruch mostly made his home in a Beis HaMedrash, wherever he got to, and it was to the Beis HaMedrash that the mystics also used to make their way, for they had no money to pay for their lodgings. These mystics fell, so to speak, between the two stools, and there was no one who interested himself to see to their comfort or needs. They did not wish to ask for charity, so they did not even have as much as the indigent who stood at the door of the Beis HaMedrash to rouse the sympathy of the generous. On the other hand, because they mostly traveled about like ordinary poor workers, their identity was wholly unknown, and the families who were always ready to be hosts to distinguished people overlooked these mystics and failed to offer them hospitality. And so it was a very hard life that these mystics led, and Baruch dreamed of the time when he might be in a position to ease their lot by offering them a proper bed to sleep in instead of the hard bench in the Beis HaMedrash, as well as a good meal instead of the scanty bits of food they managed to take along with them on their wanderings. Obviously, Baruch could not put his dreams into practice until he married. And remembering the saying that it is more difficult for a woman to be hospitable to visitors, he meant to be forewarned. This was why he was so insistent upon Reb Avraham accepting the conditions he put to him. Avraham was quick to assure Baruch that he need not worry, as knowing his daughter's kind heart, he could promise him, even before he asked her, that she would be willing and happy to agree that their home should always be with an open door to all those whom Baruch wished to invite. Now that Avraham and Baruch found themselves in absolute agreement with each other, Baruch expressed his willingness and readiness to become engaged as soon as it could be arranged. And with this happy news, Avraham departed to Lozhna. Before the actual engagement between Baruch and Rivka took place, Baruch's sister and aunt made a trip to Lozhna to meet his prospective bride, and at the same time to help arrange the engagement. Baruch had confided in them and told them that one of the reasons he was anxious to marry Avram's daughter was because he was a great admirer of Avraham, particularly because he earned his living by the toil of his own hands as a gardener. Baruch himself had worked for Avraham and had learned from him the art of gardening. Now Baruch wanted very much to have a garden of his own to earn his living by gardening after he became married. Baruch's aunt mentioned this to Avraham. Rabbi Avraham, on his part, took them to the plot of land a few miles outside Lozhna, where he proposed to have a house built for Baruch and his bride. There was sufficient land there also for growing garden produce. Baruch's sister and aunt were very satisfied, especially as Rivka had made a very favorable impression on them. A few weeks later, Avram and his daughter Rivka came to Vitebsk, where the engagement took place amidst much rejoicing. As had been agreed, Baruch was to remain in Vitebsk for yet another year of study before he settled down to married life. During this year, Baruch continued along his old line of working a few hours each day and studying during the remainder of the time. No work was too hard or too lowly for him. Often he acted as a carter, and this was indeed heavy going. Thus passed the winter, and summer gave way to autumn. The month of Elul arrived. Baruch, following the guidance of his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, was studying the books of ethics from Rabbi Yonis Shalik Shuve and other such svarim as Reishis Chochme, Hilchus Kshuve of the Rambam, as well as the tractates Rosh Hashanah and Yom dealing with the high holidays. This forum made a tremendous impression on Baruch and absolutely opened a new world for him. A new warmth and sentiment permeated his entire being, where up to now, cold reason alone had reigned. The effect was to make him feel that his life until now had been very imperfect, and only by following the teachings of these Sforim could he hope to live as perfectly as a true Jew should live. Baruch realized that his previous attitude towards his fellow beings had been, up until now, coldly calculated, and even when generous, had lacked a feeling of truly warm sentiment and kinship. Baruch recalled a recent incident which had occurred at the Beis HaMedrash in Yanovich, where he had been studying. While he was sitting in the corner, studying very intently, as was his custom, in rushed a man and a woman, hurling themselves at the Oron Kodesh, at the Holy Ark, and pouring out their hearts and crying and petition to God to help them in their terrible trouble. Their one and only child, their daughter who was getting ready to be married, lay seriously ill and was at death's door. Other people hurried in too, and they all prayed together and recited Tehillim for the sick girl. Baruch looked on in sympathy, naturally, but it had not occurred to him to participate in any way. He was at the Beis HaMedrash for the sole purpose of studying Torah, and whatever might be going on around him was not his affair. He was there to study, and study he did. Baruch learned later that the couple who had first rushed into the Beis HaMedrash to pray for the life of their daughter had for many years been childless. At long last, they were blessed with a precious daughter. They were well-known, well-placed, and well-respected people in their town, and they gave their daughter a very fine upbringing as befitted a true daughter of Israel. This girl grew up to be the credit of her parents, and she was naturally the apple of their eye. When she became of marriageable age, they were very anxious to find a suitable shidduch for her, and to their delight, a most worthy young man, well-learned in the Torah, and from a very good family, sought her hand in marriage. All arrangements for the wedding were in full swing, when to everyone's horror and grief, the prospective Kala became ill, and grew worse and worse from day to day. As nearly all the people of Yanovich and the surroundings had been invited to the wedding, the bride's sickness had become a universal anxiety. Some days later, Baruch, from his customary corner in the Beis HaMedrash, noticed that tables were being laid with all kinds of drinks and fancy delicacies. Soon there entered the couple who had prayed for their daughter's recovery, surrounded by a large crowd crowd of men and women. Baruch learned that this was in the form of a Sudas HaIdor, a Thanksgiving celebration for their daughter's miraculous recovery. Everybody seemed to be gathered there on that occasion, celebrating together with this fortunate couple whose daughter had become, thank God, well. Yet Baruch felt a stranger there, completely out of it, for he thought the celebration had no possible connection to him. In fact, when the noise and merrymaking became too disturbing for him, he went off to another room where he could continue with his studies as if nothing were happening in the other room. Now, Baruch saw life and people in a wholly new light. His approach became different, more tolerant, more sympathetic, and he reproached himself for his previous aloofness and coldness. He felt his Judaism with his heart and soul now, as well as with his mind, and felt himself at last to be on the right path towards living a truly Jewish life. Another incident came to Baruch's mind. It occurred when he was in the Bromzel for the second time. It was just before Pesach, when every Jewish inhabitant was busily occupied with Erev Pesach Achonis, the Erev Pesach preparations. There was a certain Jew in the Bromzel by the name of Avrom Binyomin, a learned man who supported himself by cleaning and sorting wool. This was quite a difficult job, and one could hardly hope to become rich through following this type of work. But Avrom Binyomin never showed himself particularly anxious to be rich. He was quite satisfied if he could earn enough to provide his family with bread. And he certainly had some sized family. There was himself and his wife and their 7 children, as well as both his parents, who were old and helpless, and also his wife's aged parents. With so many mouths to feed, Avrom Binyomin had a difficult task making ends meet. Despite his poor circumstances, Avrom Binyomin sent his oldest son, aged 15, to study at the yeshiva, although he could have used him to help with his wool combing. He sent his other children also to be educated, and carried the family burden all by himself. Despite his extreme poverty, Avrom Binyomin gave charity generously, and his house was always open to anyone in need of a night's lodging or a meal. Avrom Binyomin was known in all the Bromzel for his good-heartedness, and everyone knew that no matter how great was the need, Avrom Binyomin would accept help from nobody, not even a loan. If things became very difficult, he used to pawn whatever he could lay his hands on in the house, even their bedding. Once they had to pawn their Shabbos Leichter, and Avrom Binyomin's wife had to use a pair which their eldest son had made out of clay. They were all delighted with these candlesticks, as if they were something priceless. Everybody knew that Avrom Binyomin's first concern was for the 2 old couples beneath his roof. Then came his wife and children, and then, and only them, himself. Anyone else in his place would have been weighed down with worry, but not Avrom Binyomin. There was no more cheerful a person in the Bromzel than Avrom Binyomin. When anyone met him and asked him how things were with him and his family, he would reply laughingly, "What have we to worry about? My eldest son Shloimke is learning too at the yeshiva. Dovid Aryeh and Chaim Elio are learning at Cheder, and the youngsters are learning how to go hungry." He said this without any trace of bitterness whatsoever, and would conclude by saying, "Why should we worry? We have a merciful God in heaven who will care for me and my family and for all our people. Everything will be fine." Avrom Binyomin's house on Friday night was the happiest in town, and anyone present felt a true Oynik Shabbos, a real Shabbos delight. The house itself was sunken into the ground up to its windows. The walls were supported by poles to prevent their collapse. The windows were nevertheless clean, and the walls inside brightly cleaned. The table was covered with a white cloth, and three pairs of waxen candles stood proudly in the clay candlestick. The two old couples sat at the head of the table, while Avraham Binyamin, his wife and children, all sat around them. In the center of the table was a huge bowl of hot water to serve as soup. Pieces of bread were doled out before each person at the table. Each ate his or her portion of bread and then drank some hot water, and that was their entire meal. Yet the songs they sang following it would have suggested that they had just partaken of the richest possible type of feast. Baruch's mind turned to that afternoon when, sitting alone in the Beis HaMedrash, he was startled to see two well-built Jews carrying in a man whose face was so covered with blood as to be unrecognizable. The poor man seemed more dead than alive and quite unconscious of all the noise and activity going on around him, for people seemed to be coming and going from all sides. The injured man was none other than Avraham Binyamin. No one knew the how and the wherefore of the matter. All that Baruch heard was that Avraham Binyamin had been found in this state, under a tree, a few miles from the Bromzil, on the road to Babinovich. He was too badly hurt to be able to say what happened, and the two men had brought him into the Beis HaMedrash, as it was closer than his home. He was still alive when the doctor called, but the doctor could not give much hope for his recovery. When the people heard this, they set up a terrible hue and cry, and all started to recite Tehillim for the very sick man. By this time, Avraham Binyamin's family had gotten to know of the tragic accident, and all came running to the Beis HaMedrash, adding their cries and their psukim of Tehillim to those of all the other congregants. Baruch, of course, joined in the prayers, but he remembered quite clearly that he felt completely apart from the affair, as if it had no connection with him at all. And apart from hoping that poor Avraham Binyamin would recover for the sake of all his dependents, Baruch felt somewhat irked that all the people and the noise they made interfered with his precious Torah study. For 2 days, Avraham Binyamin's life hung in the balance. His family wanted to take him home, but the doctor said he was too dangerously ill to be moved. Some of the others urged the family to leave him at the Beis HaMedrash, as the doctor had suggested, for they thought his chances of recovery would be greater if he lay in such a holy place. Meanwhile, Baruch walked about aimlessly in the Beis HaMedrash. It was quite out of the question to be able to concentrate on study in all the commotion. When on the third day Avraham suddenly opened his eyes and asked for a drink of water, it was clear that he was going to live. His breathing became easier, and he began to look a bit more natural. The news of his miraculous turn for the better spread like wildfire through the town. The joy and relief of his family were indescribable, for Avraham Binyamin was able to sit at the table a few nights later when Pesach came. They celebrated the Siddurim as cheerfully, or rather more cheerfully, than ever. Baruch remembered a little shamefully that his relief when Avraham Binyamin was taken home was mostly a selfish one, for he would then be able to study again undisturbed. How differently Baruch felt about life and people now. His inner soul was beginning to express itself. The Svarim on ethics which he had been studying had awakened in him this new feeling of kinship toward his fellow beings that made him feel that at last he was on the right path towards self-perfection. The continuing saga of Rav Baruch, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the next installment.